You're listening to The Parting Shot with H. Allen Scott.
There are actors, and then there are movie stars. But another type of performer does exist. That rare combination of an actor and a movie star. You see, when I say movie star, I mean someone who classically has all the things that makes a movie star. You know, good looks, that sort of dynamic quality where you can't take your eyes off of them. They just have that spark, you know what I mean? But for many of them, the real acting part doesn't always happen. they're just sort of pretty. And that movie star actor, you know, in the dramatic sense, that's rare. I'm thinking of people like Julia Roberts, for example, or Denzel Washington, or George Clooney, the people who you know them for their personas, but you also know them for their amazing performances. They have those that they combine the two in a way that is just kind of magical. Well, there's one other actor that I would add to that list, James Marsden. You can't deny he's a star. I mean, just look at him. But movie star good looks only get you so far. Sure, Marsden could have relied on that, but instead, he has shaped a genre-shifting career, which is, frankly, incredibly impressive. I mean, just recently, he had his Emmy-nominated turn on Jury Duty, which is this part reality show, part improvised show, where Marsden played a version of himself on a jury with one person who had no idea that they were actually on a comedy show. It was very funny. You really need to check it out. It was meta. It was weird. It's really hard to explain, but it's a great show. He excelled at comedy, of course, in his career, doing, you know, a number of films. He also excelled at big action movies like the X-Men franchise. And now he's excelled at dramas over the years, too. And he has a new drama coming out called Knox Goes Away, where he's paired with Michael Keaton, Marsha Gay Harden, and Al Pacino. Thank you very much. I mean, that's like, it just screams Oscar. It's just Oscar, Oscar, Oscar. There's so many Oscars in the room. But one to never sit still. He also has Jerry Seinfeld's new film about the Pop-Tart coming out. He makes an appearance in that. It's called Unfrosted. And I kind of love that James Marsden is in a Jerry Seinfeld directed film about a Pop-Tart creation. I mean, come on. How great is that? He also has Sonic the Hedgehog 3 coming out later this year, too, which, huge franchise. Who saw that coming? And he's great at it. And we have a really good back and forth about his decision to join the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise. It was a delightful part of our conversation. This dude does not stop working. He is constantly working. And honestly, I didn't know what to expect going into my chat with Marsden. The cynical part of me expected it to be just another movie star chat, you know, not too deep, not that personal. And I mean, our chat did briefly get interrupted because somebody had to come pick up his suit that he wore after winning an award at the Independent Spirit Awards, which, like, that's never happened to me. I have to bring people my suits.
Right, hold on one second. Sure. I apologize. Someone was picking up my, believe it or not, the outfits we wear for award shows are not ours.
I'm not surprised. I have a.
They are lent to us.
And let's be real. I don't even own a suit. I don't have a suit. I don't rent suits. I don't have suit. I have no occasions where I need suits. But instead of more of, you know, movie star people picking up suits, we went deep talking about his career, his decisions, and how it's all worked out along the way, but also what he hopes to be doing in the future. This will go down as one of my favorite chats. I honestly left it delighted. He's a delight. Yes, he's a movie star. He's charming. He's dynamic. But he's also just a delightful, funny, interesting human being. And it's just great. And I'm not just saying that because we went hard into talking about Pop-Tarts. Again, it's not a breakfast food. Anyway, so go on and grab a snack, perhaps a Pop-Tart, because we'll be right back with James Marsden.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I have to say, I have so many questions about so many of the things you're working on. I feel like you have so many different things going on that, like, the first one, of course, Knox Goes Away. Recently, I've been so used to, like, laughing with you in projects that I kind of was like, oh, yeah, he can also do serious, too. That's right. And it's like, it kind of blew me away for a second. What appealed to you about Knox Goes Away?
Well, I guess just that. As much as I love comedy, I like to just kind of change it up when I can. And this came along, and I've always loved Michael, of course, and an opportunity unlike anything I've ever really done before, which is play his son and be directed by him, and in this great kind of noir adult film, like that's you don't really see these types of films being made anymore. And great story and good, great role. And it was just something so different than Jury Duty. I kind of like to try my best to take opportunities that are very, varied and different in tone. And this was just like, wow, you're just in the company of great people here. And how would I ever say no to this? It was more about whether or not Michael would have me. And we sat down and met for about an hour and a half and talked life and kids and everything, and just kind of shot the shit and got along really well. And he invited me on board. It was like a no brainer for me. It was just, it's rare that I grew up watching him. Like he was, he was one of my movie star heroes. And I remember Mr. Mom and all the great, I always loved his career because he could do something like Birdman and he can do something like Mr. Mom. And I admire the actors that can do everything. Mm-hmm. Really, really intense dramas, and also, gets the humor.
Yeah.
The original Ken, wasn't he? He was Ken in Toy Story.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, it's funny you say that, because as I was, thinking about the connection between you and Michael, and I mean, it's obviously not portrayed in the film, but like your career is kind of similar to Michael's in that you also do that bouncing between genres, which I never really, like, I don't think people expected that of you. You know what I mean? Because let's be real. You got the movie star good look. So and Michael necessarily didn't have that part of it. So it's kind of a surprise that you go in this direction and you've had a very similar career to Michael. Is that sort of part of the bond of what works as, I mean, the actor director and then you giving the performance for him as a director? Like, did you have that connection?
It felt a little bit. I mean, I would never really compare myself to. It's very nice of you to say that about similar careers. I would argue it, but with some humility. But he's a legend and a superstar in his own right. And my gosh, I wish I had. I'd love to have his career. That's what I've always aimed for, as a career like his. And but I get what you're saying, in that he's had a very specific approach to the types of roles that he chooses. And it feels like he likes to keep people on their toes and sort of off balance into what to expect from him. Mm-hmm. Or he's just an actor and really wants to explore all different types of material and roles. And I think he's probably, he loves it. And I don't think he never struck me as the type of person or a type of actor that would want to just do the same thing over and over again. He really is a chameleon, and he shapeshifts these different roles that he takes on. And I've always, like I said, I've always been attracted to the actors that choose to do that. I just find that really interesting and challenging. And I don't know. And there's a downside to, not a downside, but I guess there's sometimes that type of person can be confusing to Hollywood, right? Like sometimes, what do we do with him? I don't know.
Exactly.
I love it. I love it. And that's the greatest compliment anybody could pay me, is that a similar career to him. And then as far as the dynamic between he and I on set and him being a director, I mean, I've worked with very few directors who used to be actors. And every time I've worked with one, it's just always been the greatest experience to have somebody that's been in your shoes and it's in that position where you're overthinking something, or you've imposter syndrome, or you're like, what am I? I'm a fraud. What am I doing? I'm overthinking what the scene's about, or trying to muscle my way through this work. And to have somebody that knows, you know, I don't care how great you are as an actor, it's you, those are familiar themes, mm-hmm. you know, second guessing yourself.
Yeah.
So he was great at just speaking a language that another actor would understand, and sort of guiding me through, you know, avoiding sort of mistakes or pitfalls or anything that you might fall into, and get you sort of out of your own head, and it gives you some you know, some objectivity about what you're doing. So
yeah.
It was a really warm, it was a very very generous back and forth that he and I had, and it's just great to work with somebody that got it and understood it. And it wasn't like, it's, you know, he was, some directors think more about the technical stuff, obviously, and that's an art as well. But he just was like, as much as he definitely had his vision for the movie, but when he really wanted to spend his time is with the other actors, and mm-hmm. it's that type of movie, you know? And I think, like I said before, I don't think those movies are being made much anymore.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of that content sort of migrated to TV maybe, but, it's just cool to be in a great classic film with him and Pacino. And
yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, it probably helps that Michael Keaton's the director, because like it gets people like Al Pacino and like you and Marcia Gay Harden. And like, yeah. I mean, some great, great, great actors. I mean, what was that like being with them?
Well, talk about like, you know, being anxiety ridden about, do I belong here? Like, wow. You know, but, it was great. It was, you know, I've been doing this long enough. This is the type of movie, and this is the type of cast that you just always aimed for. Like, I want to belong there, you know, and feel like you have a place there, that you're working with people that are just going to make you better.
Mm-hmm.
I know people say that a lot, but it's so true. You know, when you're around those kind of talents, you just, it somehow makes it a little more effortless for you.
Yeah.
It's just, everything gets elevated. Everything gets elevated. Yeah. It's pretty, pretty, pretty cool. I mean, this was like a dream kind of movie for me to be obviously playing opposite him, but then him directed by him as well. And Pacino and everybody, it's just, you know, it's very different than Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but that's what I mean.
That's another reason why I did it. It was just, you know, another challenge, I guess.
I don't think anyone, you know, like to go from Jury Duty to this to I mean, and then also, too, the next film I want to talk about is Unfrosted, the Pop-Tart story, which blows me away. I love that you're in this movie, because there are so many. I mean, I started in comedy, and that was sort of like, that's my love. And there are so many comedy legends in this film, or a part of that film. And the fact that you're in it feels right because of your career and the comedy that you've done in your career. But it's also kind of like a batshit crazy idea for a movie, which is sort of a brilliant comedic take, too. How did that come about, and how did you get involved in it?
I mean, I heard that Jerry Seinfeld was coming back. He was going to direct, and it was a movie about the invention of the Pop-Tart. And it just all sounded absurd in a wonderful way.
Yeah.
And then I learned about some of the other cast that was on board, and, you know, Hugh Grant and everybody just was like, yeah, okay, well, what sort of ridiculous thing do I get to do in this? And it's completely, you know, it's ridiculous, and it, you know, it's a cool little cameo in the movie, and I just, you know, wanted to go in and play with all those people for a few days and have a good time. But yeah, it was another one of those. It was like, well, I can't say no to this. This just seems like a fun party you want to go to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that also, I mean, the real reason why I wanted to ask about it is because, I mean, someone like you, I don't mean to judge you or anything, but you don't seem like the person that would necessarily snack on Pop-Tarts all that much. I am one that would snack on Pop-Tarts. So I need to ask you, and I need to warn you that there is a wrong answer. What's your go-to Pop-Tart?
Ooh, well, a funny story about Pop-Tarts. Well, it's not funny, I guess, but I grew up in Oklahoma, and we didn't really have My mom was raising three boys that were a year apart and a little daughter by herself. And like, we had a box of cereal that just said cereal on it. And that was
I can relate to that. I can relate.
Yeah.
To that.
Yeah. It was Pop-Tarts was a luxury. Yes. That was a fancy thing that I would go to the bus stop and see my other friends eating.
Yeah.
Like, what's this shiny aluminum encased treat?
Yeah.
I just had, you know, some sludge in a bowl
called not Cheerios, but Oreo.
By the way, evidently I grew up in the 1920s.
No, I can relate to it. I can relate to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I did, when we were treated a few times with Pop-Tarts, I think the raspberry one or the strawberry, I think were, my favorite.
Interesting. I mean,
I never went with the chocolate.
No, chocolate's gross. That's the wrong answer, actually. Chocolate and s'mores is the wrong answer. The correct answer is the berry ones. However, brown sugar cinnamon is the ultimate, is the one that it's. See,
I would go for that if it wasn't cinnamon.
Oh, you don't like cinnamon?
Not a cinnamon fan.
That's surprising, especially in Los Angeles.
That is polarizing as like cilantro.
I mean, probably more so because cinnamon is a staple of so many delicious things. You know, it's
right. But I mean, are there people that are just like either love it or hate it?
I don't think so. I mean, I did have a coworker once who insisted that she had to put cinnamon in the coffee, and the other workers rallied to get her to stop doing that. So I can relate to
it. Shouldn't be in coffee.
It shouldn't be in coffee. I mean, that's bullshit. No, don't do it in coffee.
You could put cinnamon on a cinnamon roll.
I mean, yes, that's delicious.
Sure. There was like cinnamon toast with some butter and sugar and, you know,
incredible treat.
Yeah. But or like some holiday drink.
Oh, amazing. I mean, or even in Los Angeles here, the horchata. I mean, you have to have cinnamon and horchata. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like
it's a flavor I don't love. I don't know.
Interesting.
So when I see it maybe unfairly on the box, I judge it.
Yeah. I mean, give it a try. Give it a whirl. Give it a whirl. I will say my boyfriend is definitely in the raspberry, strawberry direction. So like you two would have that in common. And I'll just stick to the cinnamon.
I don't want to judge you, but I like your guy better than you.
That's fine. That's fine. That's fine. I mean, he probably would agree.
He wins. He wins in my book. He's got the berry flavored Pop-Tart.
I have a feeling if we were put up against each other, he'd choose you too. So I'm just going to say, I do need to talk about jury duty because it was what's so interesting about everything you have going on this year with, you know, Knox Goes Away and Sonic and everything is that jury duty was it kind of in a Michael Keaton way. So unexpected for you. You've done television. You've done all kinds of other things on television and you've done it great. I mean, you've done television great, but jury duty was such a surprising thing for you because it spoke to the thing that I think is what's so appealing about you as an actor and some of the comedy you've done in that you're sort of like the Hollywood movie star, good looks guy who can make fun of himself. And you leaned into that with jury duty in a way, which I think made your performance so perfect. Were you surprised by the reaction, how thunderous the reaction was for jury duty and how much love it's gotten?
Yeah, it was a huge surprise. I mean, I really didn't. I mean, I loved the concept of it. I loved the idea of getting in a room full of improv artists and messing around and not really having a script and just kind of, you know, just like see where it all goes. And but I never anticipated the success that came from this show. I really didn't. We hoped for it, but this was like the next day. It was people walking down the streets, stopping me saying, "You're all over TikTok. You're blowing up. There's the jury show, you know," and then it just kept growing and growing and growing. It was pretty insane. I've never been a part of something that was that it's shot so quickly into the stratosphere. It was like, wow. And I think, it was a huge surprise. The other reason why it was a surprise is I'm reminded that people don't always get to see me doing this kind of character where I'm actually sending myself up or satirizing the Hollywood guy, which is my bit that I do all the time on my own.
Yeah.
On sets.
Yeah.
Like I always pretend like I'm the sort of over entitled douchebag as like a bit when I'm on set. And so the people that know me know that that's something that I kind of like a role that I play this heightened version of myself.
Yeah.
So now you put it into the show and then you're reminded that, oh, well, the rest of the world doesn't see you walking around on set doing this bit.
Yeah.
Get to see it now. So it's the strange thing too. When people say like, you took such a risk. It didn't feel like a risk. It felt like safe. Maybe because it was maybe because I'm more comfortable making fun of myself, honestly,
yeah,
than doing something like the, like Knox Goes Away, where it's full conviction and you're diving in and, mm-hmm. and, you know, you're asking the audience to really go deep with you. And that's a little more daunting and scary to me than, you know, making a dunce of myself, or at yeah. least highlighting the sort of buffoon
yeah.
nature that I can, it's like, you know, the goof that I am.
Well,
so it didn't feel risky. It felt like, oh, this is actually really funny.
Yeah.
And it felt also, it was a reminder that, wow, when you think no one's really going to tune into something, I was thinking, well, who's going to, I don't know. Maybe people are going to show up for Amazon Freebie. I don't know.
Yeah.
This like show, it's a half reality thing. It feels like a game show, maybe kind of, but also like, there's an improv element to yep. it. Who knows?
Yeah.
So I just swung for the fences and did what I thought was funny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was what was removed was this feeling of everyone's watching. I need to be perfect. It needs to be great.
Yeah.
Pressures
yeah.
were removed. And because of that, I just kind of like went, screw it. I'm just going to have fun.
And I mean, it really showed because it's, and I think, I mean, just in terms of, I mean, they always say that comedy is harder than drama in terms of acting. And like, I mean, actors often talk about that finding that balance and the rhythm with comedy can be more difficult than, you know, drama, which I'm not an actor, so I don't know the answer to that. But it did seem like that there was like a lot of, over the years with a lot of the comedy you've done, as some of the surprising comedy you've done, it seems like it led to you feeling comfortable to be able to sort of be in a room of really great improvisers who are doing really kind of meta comedy. I mean, it was not even traditional. It's not even Curb Your Enthusiasm level comedy. It's meta comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were all so great, by the way. They just, Susie Ferris, who cast it, just brilliantly handpicked each one of those actors that most of them relatively unknown, you know, they just got the assignment and got the joke. But I guess I've always, I mean, Christopher Guest was, has always been a hero of mine, like that kind of,
yep.
where you're kind of, it gets a little blurry, these lines between like scripted, non-scripted. Is it him? Is it not him? Is mm-hmm. it real? Is it not real? You know, like Waiting for Guffman is one of my top three comedies of all time. I just always thought, God, I want to do that kind of comedy. I want to do something that feels so real and so unscripted and loose. And like, you're just allowed to be in this character and as absurd and insufferable.
Yeah.
Can be, you know, if you just live in it and not worry about what's my next line.
Yeah.
On when you turn the page, what's the next line? You're just thinking, I'm just going to be in it and become this guy. And I guess this kind of sounds method, but I've always wanted to do that kind of comedy, which is, hey, here's the joke. Here's the purpose and the intention of the scene. Yeah. Get there however you want.
Yeah.
And get there with other actors that also know where the intention of the scene is and sort of colorful ways to get there.
Yeah.
And you play and it's, I don't know, it's like,
it worked out so well. It worked out so
well.
Yeah.
I got really lucky with good people. And the challenging part was him, like, cause you never know what he's going to say, say or do. But so this was my, you know, David Bernad, who's a close friend of mine, worked together on a couple of things, this movie D-Train. And, he did White Lotus, he's producer on White Lotus. He came to me with the concept and he said, hey, this would be a fun, I know how funny you are. Like, this would be a great, I think this, you'd be perfect for this role. And you'd be kind of making fun of yourself, but no one can do it better than you. And it's Lee Eisenberg and Gene Stubnitsky and like all these, and Todd Shulman and the guys from Borat. I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was, you know, you were in great company, but it was, we didn't have comps for it. I couldn't compare it to anything else that's ever been really done.
I mean, I think that's why it opens up a totally new direction for your career in a way. I mean, it's sort of like, it's something that no one saw.
I guess I'm not sure how to parlay this into anything really. Yeah. I can't really play myself again.
Start a YouTube channel. Start a YouTube channel.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Right. Yeah. I loved, I mean, I get the same pleasure. I got the same pleasure playing that role. I would imagine that Larry David does on Kurt, which is, I can't say these things in real life. Mm-hmm. I so badly want to walk the streets and just be this, you know,
I would pay to watch that. So maybe you do. Well, it's
making sure that everybody knows that you're joking.
Yeah.
Like if you don't know somebody, they're like, Jesus, Marsden's a prick.
But it's also kind of fun. I mean, it's kind of like,
yes, because if you're smart enough to know that you're joking, that you're, it's a great sort of mechanism to making fun of,
yeah,
kind of what we do and our, the celebrity lifestyle and
totally,
you know, special treatment and entitlement and all that stuff. It's a way of kind of obviously poking fun at that, with also without also completely disregarding what we do for a living.
Yeah, but, totally.
But yeah, but it was a huge surprise, and very, very happy with how it turned out. I was concerned that we were doing some sort of psychological damage to poor Ronald.
Yeah, you know? He turned out okay. He's good.
Turned out okay. Yeah. He's loved.
He's doing good.
He's enjoying himself.
He's enjoying himself, which is all he needs. Well, I need to ask you about Sonic the Hedgehog, because Sonic the Hedgehog 3, because it kind of brings up this idea of, like I said before, you've done so many different types of films and different genres, and you've done a few franchises too, and you've done lots of different things. And you must get, I mean, when a fan approaches you on the street, I would imagine that at this point you can probably be like, you're X-Men, or you're Sonic, or you're oddly The Notebook, or whatever it is. Like, you must get something. Does that happen to you? Are you able to sort of pinpoint where people know you from as they approach you? And are you surprised that, like, Sonic has had this sort of, like, I mean, even just longevity with, I mean, Sonic the Hedgehog 3, like, it's kind of wild.
Yeah, I know. I mean, again, another one that you hope for that's going to be a big success and people are going to love what you make and what you present to them. And you're here doing the third film, which is a great indicator that it's success.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm always a little, I always have a little trepidation stepping into every role. I'm like, is this going to be a good career move? Am I going to be good in this? And I remember with Sonic, it was, okay, I did Enchanted, which was, well, I really loved. It was fun, but I'm dancing around with a little chipmunk in that. I did this movie Hop, where I'm talking to a rabbit. If I do this movie, I'm just the guy that's going to talk to CGI rodent. Yeah. Rest of his career, which could be lucrative,
yeah,
but maybe creatively, I don't know. But I think the combination with Jeff Fowler, who's this, you know, our brilliant director, and Neil Moritz, they added this element of, hey, let's not make this isn't their words, but the feeling was, we want this to be something more than Alvin and the Chipmunks, let's say, right? We want this to be like Fast and the Furious meets one of those films. Mm-hmm. We want there to be action. We want the jokes to, like, be smart. Mm-hmm. And the audience is, you know, full of parents with their kids, and they want the parents to laugh. So it was a great blend of, and Jim Carrey, you know, unhinged and doing his. So I was like, well, yeah, let's do it. But there was at the beginning, like, oh man, if I do another one of these movies, but I couldn't ignore the popularity of Sonic, and, you know, it was Sega's,
yeah,
Mario Brothers, right? It was like it was a huge cultural icon. Yeah. And I remember watching the first film at the premiere. I hadn't seen it yet. It was sitting next to Jim and Tika and Ben Schwartz. And about 20 minutes in, we all looked at each other like, damn, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. The best version of this movie that we could have made, I think, is up there on the screen.
Yeah.
So I felt proud about that. And then, of course, like, great, let's make a million of these.
Well, and also to be bookended by, I mean, you just said, sitting between Tika and Jim Carrey. I mean, one's an Oscar winner who's a brilliant, brilliant comedian. And another one is someone who deserves an Oscar and has been robbed time and time again from getting a nomination. So, like, those are, that's good company to be in.
Yeah, no, great company. And it's so, I think... Yeah, those movies are special. I mean, they're, you know, first of all, wonderful people, the big family of good people. And, but like you said, just like so super talented and you just kind of, you double down on that. If you're worried about being the guy that's going to be, you know, always in CGI, you know, creature movies, you're like, oh, look around, like, oh, I'm here with Jim Carrey, and I'm here with Tika, and I'm here with Ben, and I'm all these great people. This is, we're good.
You're definitely doing fine.
We're good. We're good.
Yeah.
So it's a nice thing to, you know, you go out in public and I can sometimes spot when someone's going to say Sonic or Westworld or but I never really know. And the hardest one is, where have I seen you? I, you know, oh. and I, you know, whatever. I, I'm just going to rattle off a few of the ones that are most popular, I guess. But
well, if I ran into you in public, I have a feeling, A, you'd be not horrified, but you'd probably be like, that's the leader of the homosexuals, because my reference would be that you were in the pilot episode of The Nanny, which is wild. I mean, every time I watch it, which I'm a big Nanny fan, you're also in another episode as well. It's to me, that's what I would come up to you as. I mean, also Enchanted and all the other ones too. But like The Nanny, I'm like, he got to start on The Nanny. How wild is it? Because that was so early in your career. Do you remember how, and this is my last question for you, do you remember how exciting it probably was for you as a young actor to be on this show that I don't know if it was a hit at that time or if it was on the way to being a hit, but then now also Fran Drescher and this amazing year that she's had basically saving the Screen Actors Guild and how badass she is. I mean, I think it's kind of awesome that you were in the pilot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had nothing to really compare it to other than working in Oklahoma mowing people's lawns. I was like, I'm getting paid to be an actor. Great. I'm happy.
Yeah.
I do remember thinking there's no way this show goes. I was like, what? A show about a nanny and his voice. And like, I just was thinking, we'll see. But you know, and in the pilot, I had like two lines.
Yeah. But they brought you back. Lines. I mean, they knew.
And then they brought me back for the third episode of it got picked up for six.
Yeah.
If my memory is correct, it was 30 years ago. And then, yeah, I was in the third or fourth episode or whatever. And it was like a bigger episode where I'm taking the daughter out, but she thinks I'm into her. And anyway, but I loved it. It was like, that was back when three camera sitcoms were the thing. And you had to learn the cameras where he's not. And like now three cameras, like a lost art.
Yeah.
But it is a bit surreal to think about. That's how I started.
And how your career could have gone. I mean, if you would have been picked up to even be on that show, your career could have been very different. I mean, that's kind of, it's kind of wild to think about.
A lot shorter. Yeah. I could have, who knows? I don't know. Meaning I could have, well, I don't know if it would have been shorter. That's not a slam on the show. It's just like, sometimes you're on a show for 7 or 8 years and you're not afforded the ability to go and do other types of roles and find your way. And, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I remember even before that I was offered to test for Days of Our Lives. And I was thinking, this is great. This is the greatest job. A contract for 3 years.
Wow.
You get paid as an actor. And I remember at the time my manager was saying, no, maybe we don't want to do this yet. Maybe we'll, you know, you're getting good feedback everywhere else. Maybe you want to do a primetime show. Maybe we'll do a movie.
Interesting.
And I ended up saying no to doing that. But my father was like, who just decided to, or agreed to pay for my rent and my food and everything for a year. I've been in LA for a month and I'm turning down jobs. And he's like, what are you doing? I think early on I made a decision to really be okay with saying no and kind of committing to the idea that if you're really just having the quality of the content of the work be the center, you know, the sort of centerpiece to why you're making this decision, yes or no, that's going to equal a good career if you're going to have one. And I figured, you know, just align yourself as much as you can with the best directors and the best material. If you can, for what's in front of you, choose the best one that you can go for. So, and I allowed myself room to move and try different things. And I think that started this whole guy who jumps around from genre to genre. And it just kind of became not a trademark. I would never be so arrogant to say that, but it's like, this is like what my identity of my career, I guess, is a better way to put it.
I think it is kind of a trademark too. I mean, it is so unexpected. I would just say it. I mean, for some, you could have gone in a very leading man direction and you picked to play the weird prince in a Disney movie or like, I mean, you could have done something different.
I mean, but I'm far more comfortable doing those roles than playing the leading man who's got us all the shit together. I mean,
deep down that says you're a weirdo just like us. And I've always said attractive people should not be good at comedy. And maybe you're just a weirdo in an attractive body. So there you go.
Mike, I want John C. Reilly's roles. I want to be him. You know what I mean? It's like, I relate more to that in the just kind of, than you're the guy who just always has, every hair in place.
Yeah.
I find that more fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's worked out for you. So there you go. Oh,
thank you.
Well,
but you know, every now and then you gotta, you know, gotta do something different. And I mean, as much fun as I've had with the, I love the comedy and I want to keep doing more and more of it, but it was a nice departure to come back to something like Knox and do something pretty heavy and pretty emotionally challenging. And it was a bit of a, can I do this?
Well, I think Knox and Jury Duty are both going to be, I mean, both are examples of sort of your range and where you can go and all of those things. So like, you know, I feel like this is honestly, I mean, when I watched Jury Duty, I was like, oh, this guy's going to be on a White Lotus someday. This guy's going to be on like one of, I mean, it's like, it's sort of that career shift of sort of, we don't expect this from you. And so to go in these different directions, it's exciting as a fan who has been with you since I was a kid, you know?
That means a lot. Very nice of you to say. Yeah.
I
like you better than your brother now.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it.
Of course,
it.
You too.
Expand your horizons with Pop-Tarts. And I hope to meet you in real life someday soon.
All right. I'm going to try the brown sugar cinnamon.
Give it a try. It's good. All right. It's good. I bet you never thought a chat with James Marsden would make you want a Pop-Tart, did you? I also need you to know how hard it was for me to not make a funny yet probably inappropriate joke with Marsden about me potentially being his Pop-Tart or like some sort of stupid Pop-Tart double entendre or something. I don't know. I would have thought of it on the spot. I had a lot in my head going on when I was talking to him and I didn't, but I didn't do it because I'm a professional, clearly. Thank you very much. Let me know what you thought of today's episode. I'm H. Allen Scott on everything. And leave a little rating and review wherever you're listening to this because that helps me a lot. And you know, go to Newsweek.com and follow Newsweek on everything. And while you're there, subscribe to my newsletter for the culture. It's fun. It comes out a lot and it's great. Until then, watch something fun and have a great day.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.